This is Astrevo Podcast, which is a platform for women with disabilities in East Africa and small developing island states to highlight their experiences, challenges, and opportunities for strengthening their voice to actively participate in climate change policy and negotiations. Hi, my name is Susan Grace, and welcome to another episode where we discuss matters climate change and inclusivity. I'm going to turn to my panelists and give them an opportunity to introduce themselves. First of all, hello, looking very sharp, looking very beautiful, Faith. Good to see you again. Prof, let me start with you. Maybe you can introduce yourself for the people who are seeing you for the first time.
Yeah, thank you very much. My name is Cromwell Lukorito. I work for the University of Nairobi. In the Department of Earth and Climate Sciences, where I serve as a lecturer and researcher, especially in matters around the climate science and applications, notably in biological systems, including agriculture, food and nutrition security, and ecosystems. And this, of course, biological in nature, doesn't omit matters also of applications of climate to health. Currently, I'm also serving as the vice chair to the working group 2 of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that addresses matters of climate change impacts, adaptation, and vulnerability. I believe that to some extent pins who I am, although, of course, you may also get my name mentioned as a faculty with the Africa Group of Negotiators Expert Support, what we normally call AGNES, in its flagship program on climate leadership. Negotiations and a diplomacy. Okay. As also, I serve as a steering committee member to the Climate Smart Agriculture Multi-Stakeholder Platform under the Climate Change Unit of the Ministry of Agriculture and Livestock Development in the country.
Hi, everyone. My name is Faith Gikunda from the Inclusive Climate Change Adaptation for Sustainable Africa, that is ICASA. I am the communication expert and also dealing with knowledge and information sharing. And I am happy to see Prof. We serve together as steering committee members of the Kenya Climate Smart Agriculture Multi-Stakeholder Platform, where, again, I sit in as a communications expert, ensuring that we bring people together to share information and also communicate about agriculture and climate change issues. Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. It's good that you're in communications, because now I'm going to throw the first question towards you. Today we are talking about amplifying the stories of women who are living with disabilities. Mm-hmm. But before we amplify something, it needs to first be present. Do you feel like there are enough stories being told of women living with disabilities when it comes to climate change matters?
Okay, what I can say is that it's important to appreciate that stories are already being told. Many stakeholders have come up to tell stories, but there are stories that we still need to hear, because at times the stories that we hear are the very common ones, or the ones that we are used to hearing every day. And I feel that there is an opportunity to tell more stories in deeper, and also looking at how women with disability, how they are affected differently, instead of just putting a bracket to the stories that we tell. So to answer you, something is being done, but there is an opportunity to do more and to go deeper into stories that have not been told, and stories that can make more impact in addition to what is there.
Prof, in these negotiation tables, are there women who are living with disabilities that are involved?
Well, let me be honest enough to say that I've not been very, very conscious to want to focus on an analysis of one, their inclusion in the negotiation process, and two, their input into the negotiation texts. Remember, in the climate change negotiations, we negotiate at the level of countries that we call parties as the smallest unit, which we escalate the level of other like-minded negotiating blocks. For Africa, we have the African group of negotiators. We have Kenya as a party with its own position. We have the African group of negotiators, the African countries coming together to harmonize a common position. Then we look for strategic negotiating blocks globally. In this case, we talk about the G77 and China as another negotiating block for our issues. Mm-hmm. In that regard, given the centrality of the role of women, especially in climate action, the UNFCCC, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, found it necessary to craft a negotiation work stream on gender and climate change.
Right.
So it is there. And under the gender lens now, we fragment it into the various components where people with disability are also taken care of, catered for, the PWDs. But there is a challenge here because we simply talk about a global PWD. We don't have data that makes it appropriate to isolate issues of women with disability, raising the concern about how their case can be accurately presented in the negotiation process to inform some targeting of intervention that will meet the specific interests or concerns of women with disability. So if we were able to put up a case anchored on disaggregated information about people living with disability across men, women, youth, children, then we can begin coming closer to informing the sort of interventions that we require. Mm-hmm. So me, I would want to say in response to your question that yes, initiatives are there, but they are being pulled into one basket, forgetting the fact that climate change impacts are differentiated in form depending on the level of exposure of the affected people. Women are impacted differently from men. Even if we came down the PWDs, you'll find that the PWB that are women will have their own vulnerabilities that are unique to them. Very different from the PWDs that are actually from the male segment. Why? Whether disabled or otherwise, culturally, we have gender-differentiated roles and responsibilities, which will now give us different what? Exposures to the climate hazards.
One thing is for sure, when you're around a professor, you're in class and you will learn a thing or two. So as I'm listening to him, I'm realizing, yes, climate change is the umbrella problem. But he said a woman who's living with disability is affected differently, a man living with disability different, and also a man and a woman who are not living with disability. So it's hitting everybody differently. So now that brings the question, are there any strategies that we are putting in place to make sure that everyone's needs are met when it comes to matters climate change?
Okay, yes, I can say there are strategies that are continually being developed because, again, this is a continuous process. In the process, you learn that when you're starting off, you might have a strategy in mind that seems to be a fit for all. But along the way, as climate change, also because it keeps on changing, it's increasing, then you realize those strategies no longer work. So you need to go deeper into looking at how to reach each person that is affected in a different way. So I can say the strategies are not lacking, but they need to be reviewed over time so that as time moves, as the climate change impacts change or shift, because they keep on shifting, we are well prepared to deal with them. So in terms of women with disability, there are strategies that exist, like Prof has said, mainly on the larger people with disability community. But we've not had quite strong strategies in place that are like dig deeper into the form of disability, what the specific interventions interventions are needed, where this woman is living, the economic status, even the in terms of the economic status, and even in terms of even the family size and that kind of information. So as we now look into reviewing the processes, that is what we need to do. Look at the other existing impact or the other predisposing factors like age, gender, and also in terms of family units. We need to look at that so that we can have well-informed strategies and also interventions. Yes, so I think, like I mentioned earlier, yes, there are. A lot of work has been done, but it's something that needs to keep on evolving. And as it's evolving, let's ensure that the women with disability themselves are involved so that they are able to well inform the reviewed strategies that we are coming up with or any other new ones that are being developed.
Professor, we're here talking about climate change and inclusivity. And I believe maybe 10 years ago, we didn't have such conversations and maybe we're not very intentional about it. But here we are, times are changing. Is this something that you think the educational system should incorporate in their syllabus?
Yes. Solutions come from lessons learned and particularly accumulated knowledge about some of the potential risks to humanity, including to the people living with a disability. That's why, just to start from what Faith has said, we are talking about storytelling. Storytelling is critical because it helps us isolate the risk as well as opportunities that exist for interventions, so that we can create positive impact in the life of the people living with a disability, and notably the women whom we are discussing today, raising the need for us to focus on, in the context of the natural forces like climate change, which are there to stay. They are natural. We have no human capacities to stop them, but we can be able to stop the drivers or limit the drivers, and be able to live with the presentations. Mm-hmm. And that brings to fore the issue of adaptation, which is a continuous adjustment in the way we do things, in the way the people living with disabilities are supposed to also conform to adjustments mm-hmm. that are required for them to keep living with a change. Mm-hmm. And that requires then a lot of knowledge, a lot of awareness on what the drivers are, what the interventions are. And if we begin in building these values into society, then it becomes good, because the PWDs are here with us from time immemorial into time in the future. They are going to be here with us. So a sustainable way of now addressing their issues becomes important. Mm-hmm. And the best place then you can anchor investment in terms of capacity building, capacity enhancement, is within our education system. Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. That's where it all starts.
Okay. Faith, I think also in the previous episodes, we've encouraged ladies, be on the front line, be vocal about matters, climate change and policies and all that. But then let's agree that not everybody can be in the leadership position. So are there other places, other rooms that we can, rather women with a disability can occupy that are not necessarily leadership? Because we also don't want to make someone feel like if you're not in leadership, you're not making any impact.
Okay, you're right. A lot has been talked about leadership. Prof has mentioned about capacity building, which is happening a lot. And it is time that we look at, after this capacity building, after this training for leadership, what next? What happens to those that have not managed to attend these leadership and capacity building meetings or workshops or trainings? This is where now we go back to implementation. Because if you build the capacity of 5-10 people, and you remember it was mentioned, or rather, actually, it's a fact that about 16% of the global population is with disability. What happens to the other, like, let's say you build the capacity of 5%. What happens to the 11% or whatever percentage is left? Then we go down now to the implementation. Once the capacity and the leadership skills are built, it is important also to ensure that we are looking at how it connects back to the other population that has not been built their capacity. Mm-hmm. And in so doing, what this means is that we need to design programs that are not only at the leadership level, but programs are also looking at the intervention level or the implementation level, where this leadership and capacity building happens, and it flows down to the grassroots where people with disability are.
You know, earlier on I was giving Prof a demonstration and I was saying, you're pumping air into something, but on this other side there's someone deflating it. So it ends up looking like there's nothing that you're doing, yet there's a lot of effort going into it. And I'm thinking of a scenario where we're empowering women who are living with disabilities and telling them, come out, come strong, get involved. But now they're coming into this world of now a huge population of people who are not living with disabilities and people who maybe don't know how to handle, how to welcome these people. Do you think that that is also a gap we need to fix, Prof, where we need to also, shall I say, educate or somewhat create awareness with the people who don't live with disability on how to live with people who are living with disability?
Thank you very much. I think that is the way to go. I think the intervention here, it should be at societal level where all are involved. But the specific roles here will depend on the need. I subscribe to a school of thought where I feel that it is increasingly difficult to build one's capacity. It's very difficult. Mm-hmm. But you can only assist the affected people to build their own capacities. So that in a way looks philosophical, but perhaps a more impactful approach. Mm-hmm. Many times we are coming up with capacity building programs that are imaginary. We feel this will actually work in village A, in village B, in country A, in country B, which may not necessarily be the case. Yeah? We are actually imagining for them. Mm-hmm. How if we turned around the coin and have them express their failed need for capacity development? Can they be the ones triggering the need for capacity building? Uh-huh. Yeah? Other than us driving the process from the other side. Yeah? Yes? So that means, before you come in, that means then a constant engagement with the people with a disability, including women with a disability, becomes important. Because then our intervention gets anchored on the felt need of this target group. We now go and craft programs that are responsive to the need. Other than us trying to dictate what must be done. And I believe that's why the element of capacity building is being replayed ever since I was a student up to today.
Yeah?
It's the same thing.
And I feel then we need to change the approach. Mm-hmm. Let us support them to build their own capacity. Mm-hmm. Because disability, even among women, is not a uniform disability. Mm-hmm. There are differentiated disabilities. The needs, as it were, are very different. Mm-hmm. Yes, because the degree of impairment is different. Yes. They require different interventions.
Prof, just maybe to drive the point you've just said, I'm thinking of a scenario where you go to maybe people who build houses, you tell them, I want an 8-bedroom mansion. Yeah. Imagine the architect drawing it and giving it to the people to jenga without your knowledge, you won't apata tu nyumba. That's how it is when it comes to women and also persons who are living with disability. We can't just sit back and say, we'll come up with the solutions ourselves, then we'll communicate. It's good to involve them in this process. But now, even as we prepare to end up this conversation, I'm sure there's a woman wondering, okay, I participate, I come forward maybe with suggestions of how to participate in this. How sure am I that I'll be heard? How sure am I that my story will be given a platform just the same way a director of a company will be given a platform, you know? Yeah, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, thanks. That's a very good question. And that's why we have a lot of misinvestment in terms of resources and energy, talking about things which don't see the light of the day. Because whom are you talking to? It's very important. Because it determines whether your message will go beyond the point of mention. Mm-hmm. At country level, we have a dedicated ministry dealing with gender that embraces issues of PWDs. How connected are our PWD systems to the ministry, to the line ministry? Because if that happened, then it's easier, given their voice, for them to even influence policy adjustments to cater for some of these omissions that we are witnessing today. Mm-hmm. Our transport infrastructure is totally anti-PWDs. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. To start with. Our housing is totally anti-PWDs. Mm-hmm. Talk about anything, it is not compliant to the requirements of the PWDs.
To be honest, sometimes even our places of work.
I was coming to that. Uh-huh. Our workplaces where these PWDs are serving are even in a worse off state. Mm-hmm. No facilities that are actually commensurate with the specific needs or requirements of the PWDs. Mm-hmm. Why these omissions? Their voices are not being heard.
Faith, any parting shot?
For me, what I would say is that there is need to create platforms. And by so doing, these platforms can help pass across information from one person to another. And in this, I will mention about a platform that ICASA and Semiride and partners are working on that is a platform for a disability-friendly platform that will be used for sharing information across board, across all stakeholders, or any party that is interested. I think for us, we took the challenge of developing structures that will ensure that these stories are heard. Mm-hmm. It's an online platform that is in form of a website that is disability friendly, meaning if someone has an issue with or someone has a hearing disability, it's a platform they can access. If someone has issues with color, it's a platform that you can easily adjust the color and even the font and even go ahead and engage audio for you to be able to get information.
Thank you so much, Faith, for the insights. Thank you so much, Prof, for the insights. There's something Prof has said. Who you talk to is very important. As much as we're telling you, come forward, share your stories, it'll be amplified. Who you talk to is very important, because when you're sick, you don't go to the farmer. When you need to find seeds, you don't go to a painter. You know, who you talk to matters. Thank you so much for being part of this conversation. Nakama kawaida, I will see you in the next episode. My name is Susan Grace.